This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, Sam Robson from Football Radar guests for a full review of Sunday's J1 Match Day 4, while we'll also be joined off the top by first-time guest Alex Bishop to discuss surprising table toppers FC Tokyo, who rose to the top flight summit with a 1-0 home win over previously perfect Nagoya. The J-Talk podcast starts now. And just before I welcome in my guests, I should let J2 and J3 fans know that we'll be J1 only in this episode. Not being racist, I just want to build the suspense before our first J2 special of the new season next week. So, without any further ado, let me welcome Sam Robson back to the pod. Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for having me back.
Not at all. Always a pleasure, Sam. And as promised in the intro, a man who actually got a couple of mentions in last week's episode, but is here for his full J-Talk debut. Alex Bishop, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Ben. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on, finally.
Fantastic. Fantastic to have you here, Alex. And regular listeners will know we haven't lacked for FC Tokyo coverage on the show over the years with myself and regular guests Scott McIntyre and Dan Orlowitz, all fans of the Gasmen. And when we've talked about Tokyo, we've tended to just have a big old moan. And now, don't get me wrong, there are still a million things I'd like to see the club do better. But we find ourselves alone at the top of J1, Alex. So maybe, just maybe, we can be a bit more glass half full this time around. Now, perhaps you will go on to tell us this is just a false dawn and in no way sustainable. But before we get on to Sunday and the season so far, with our first-time guests, I'd like to ask them about their Japan and J-League supporting backstory. So what's yours? How long have you been in Japan and how did you become an FC Tokyo supporter?
Well, good question. I've been in Japan since the first time I arrived was in 2010 as a student up in Sapporo at Sapporo University. Within, I think it was the first couple of weeks, maybe the first 3 weeks, I'd been invited along to a Consadore game at the Sapporo Dome. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't really, that time I was a student, so I didn't really have too much interest in just following a team as avidly as I do now. But certainly it was interesting to see, how the Japanese do it, how the fans are, how the football is, really get a flavour for their, the relevance for football in the country. So I went a couple of times to Consadore. They were deep down in J2 then, I think, nowhere near the what they are now with Misha Petrovic, not at all. I think the first game I went to was against Tokyo Verdy, if I'm not wrong there. Poor draw, 0-0. So I went 2-3 times, went back to the UK to graduate, as I was still a student then. Graduated from Liverpool, Liverpool John Moores University. Came back to Japan to work in 2012. And then FC Tokyo came around 2014. I've always lived, the west side of Tokyo, Kichijoji, Shimokitazawa, Shinjuku, for those who are familiar with the city. Anyone from England will tell you, or any kind of football fan from England worth their salt will tell you that you would always go for the local team. The home team is the one you want to get involved with. Get involved with the community that you live in. And FC Tokyo was the local one for me. So I went along, I think it was against Marinos, last game of the season, 2014. Again, another draw. We drew 1-1. Kind of went. As an Evertonian, it was quite the experience having to sit through You'll Never Walk Alone at the beginning of the game. That took me by a little bit of a surprise. But I kind of managed to stomach that and still managed to stomach that somehow, usually by escaping and going for a pint while they're getting on with that. And the rest is history. The season after that was 2015, Yoshinori Muto season. He's now at Newcastle, of course. That's still our best ever finish, right? We finished fourth with Fikadinti in charge. And then after that, the rest was history. I kind of took a liking to the team, the people who I met there. You know, the football hasn't always been great, but the journey it's taken me on, the trips it's taken me on around the country, the people I've met, you know, the friends I've met, you know, that's the experience so far. And, you know, as I've gone by, I've really gotten to know a little bit about the J-League, not just Tokyo. You know, I've traveled the country, every stadium in J1 I've been to so far, so I know quite well the landscape of the league. Yeah, and that's me now.
All right then. Yeah, definitely a labour of love following Tokyo up and down the country. Either that or you have a massive masochistic streak, Alex. But here we are. We are top of the league after that previously mentioned 1-0 home win over Nagoya with a Grampus old boy, Kensuke Nagai, the hero. He was sent racing clear by Captain Fantastic Keigo Higashi's through ball from halfway and 9 minutes into the second half. And after he had spurned a one-on-one with Mitch Langerak in just the fourth minute of the game, he made no mistake second time round.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he's one I've really turned around on Kensuke Nagai this this season. I think last season he couldn't put anything away. He couldn't hit the barn door, that guy. I think you could make a compilation video just out of the misses that he had for us. But I think this season, you know, he really needs someone to go up front with him, I think. And I mean, playing him right on the end, on the last defender, he's the kind of guy who can break through. He's got that physique. I think the speed is his biggest asset. So, you know, if he can break through, which he has the physique and the speed to do so, you know, you don't always trust him to be on target or to beat the keeper. But I think he had a couple of shots before that in the game yesterday. And then finally, he managed to put one away and give us the lead.
Indeed, Sam, as Alex says there, Nagai, well, he's known for his blinding speed, but certainly not his calmness in a one-on-one. I mentioned his earlier chance that he put well wide, and he knows the new Brazilian striker, JL, is breathing down his neck for a start. So to stick that one away will do his confidence the world of good, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly, especially with JL scoring on his off the bench last week. It was definitely putting pressure on Nagai, and Nagai has to step up his game. I thought he was quite good in this game. He's always had that pace, and that is always his major threat. But now that he can stick a few goals away, it's always a good option for Tokyo, especially if they want to sit deep and counter. He's the perfect striker in that situation, and he can feed off Diego Oliveira. He kind of takes defenders away, gives Diego Oliveira a lot more space to drop into, and he can start moves off as well. So I think that partnership is very good. But yeah, he can't slip up Nagai because JL should be right behind him and ready to take his spot.
I'll come straight back to you, Sam. Obviously, it's great to have Alex here, and we're going to get his thoughts on Tokyo so far and what's taken them to the top of the table. But yeah, before we go into a bit more detail on Tokyo's season so far, I'd like to get your thoughts on Nagoya in this game. They obviously came in as the only team, a perfect three wins from three after three match days, obviously. But yeah, so they've slipped up for the first time here. I mean, they could very easily have taken a point right at the death, but Joe was unable to get his very, very late header on target. But yeah, so Nagoya failing to score for the first time this season, so Tokyo doing just about enough defensively. But that was Akihiro Hayashi had a decent day between the sticks. But yeah, just an off day for Nagoya, did you think, or have they kind of been flattering to deceive thus far?
Maybe a little bit of both. I think they haven't been quite as cavalier as they maybe were as their best attacking side last season. They've kind of reined in a little bit, but I think it's just an off day. I think Tokyo have to have credit. They defended very well. They kind of kept Joe and Xavier under wraps a little bit. I think maybe Nagoya will have to move away from Akasaki up front. I know he scored those two goals a couple of weeks ago, but I think they're much better when they have like the more dynamic movement of Naoki Maeda and then or Yuki Soma. So you can get Gabriel Xavier kind of closer to Joe. I think they work better in that way. And then Mateus is coming back as well. He's missed the start of the season through injury, but came off the bench. So I don't think Nagoya will just panic at this. I think it's just one of those days, and they've definitely got the quality to go again and kind of improve on this performance. And as you say, they could easily have taken a point from the game. So I wouldn't be too disheartened, but I think you have to give a lot of credit to Tokyo.
All right, Alex, what did you make of Nagoya on the afternoon. Yeah, they obviously came in top of the pile, and I mean, they only slipped a spot to second. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think, yeah, a very good defensive display from Tokyo, and Nagai took his chance, well, he's the second time around when it came. But yeah, what did you make of Nagoya on the afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. It wasn't really, you know, I don't think it was too bad for Nagoya. They really did try. They just couldn't quite get through that solid Tokyo defense, right? I mean, I think we were playing with like five guys. We had this solid line of five defenders. And what was really interesting about Tokyo is the way that they moved off the ball. So, you know, as soon as Nagoya like came on the attack, came on the approach, you had like almost the whole Tokyo team organized and in the box. And you saw how Nagoya kind of changed it up a little bit in the second half. They were kind of putting the balls out like to the wide, trying to get short crosses into Joe or someone like that. But no, in the end, it was just, I think, Tokyo defended well, which is what they probably do the best, I'd say. So, and Nagoya very much still in the race, I think. They're only on 9 points. So, yeah, it's completely open, and I wouldn't be too disheartened if I was them.
Yeah, fair enough then. So, Alex, it's still very early days, but what progress have you seen from Tokyo thus far? Of course, they spent the majority of last season in the top three before their horrible last 3 months. But I don't know, this start, and again, it's very early, but this seems slightly more sustainable to me. I mean, based on the solid defence that we've mentioned, they've kept three clean sheets in four games, with the only caveats being the two dreadful goals they conceded away at Shonan. It's a very workmanlike, I would say, starting 11 that has been unchanged for the first four league fixtures. So have you seen improvement that would indicate a continued ability to grind out results? And do they have enough difference makers, in inverted commas, as Scott McIntyre likes to call them, to hang around at the sharp end of the table?
Oh, well, who knows? I mean, like you say, it's quite early. Improvements, definitely. I'd say there isn't any kind of real revamp as to what Hasegawa liked to put out last year. I think things just seem to be clicking into place a little bit better. Again, coming back to Nagai, he's playing, you know, right on the last defender, that counter-attacking forward who we need. He seems to be having, you know, a really good impact on the team this year. They're using him very well, and he's working all through the game as well, kind of, you know, right at the end of the game, he's chasing defenders down, getting up and down the pitch. I think he came off like the 80th minute yesterday, so he worked like a dog. So if he continues to work like that, you know, he could, I don't know, I mean, I think he will, you know, end up staying in the first team. Kubo as well, we've got him out wide this year, and he seems to be really kind of clicking into place, making runs up and down the wing there, cutting inside. An assist last week against Tosu as well. So I think he's much better than that. What's his name? Omori Kotaru would be the alternative to Kubo. And I hope he's not the successor to Kubo once Kubo goes back to Barcelona. But he was a very kind of forgettable player, if you ask me. Still on the bench, mind. So, yeah, I just think, you know, it's the same defensive mentality, for better or for worse, as last season, just with the attack a little bit more pinpoint, a little bit more lethal. And quite a lot of speed in the team, I'd like to add as well, with Kubo and Nagai, of course. Yeah, I mean, we seem to have a good partnership with Ogawa and Higashi, is it, on the left. You'll see Ogawa coming up, running down the wing and getting crosses in. Maybe not as good as Ota Kosuke, who was his predecessor, of course, who's now on the bench. Mm-hmm. But I think he's also developing, nice young guy, and he'll just kind of get better and better. So I think things are really kind of, you know, starting to look good and click into place, finally, of course.
Fair enough then. So, Sam, yeah, we obviously spoke about Tokyo after match day one, after the 0-0 draw at Todoroki. And I mean, we wondered whether Tokyo had, even though I was terrified of the fixture when it was announced, maybe that had been a good time for Tokyo to travel to face the two-time defending champions. And then, of course, they've won the two games after that, away at Shonan and home against Tosu. But I mean, those two clubs are probably in most of people's predicted bottom sixes, so we certainly wasn't getting too carried away after those two results. But then to play a fairly sizable early season game, I mean, most people wouldn't have had these two as the top two after three rounds, but that's how it panned out. And so it was a decent sized match for this early in the season. But again, as we've mentioned, yeah, Tokyo was solid defensively and it took one of their decent chances when they were able to. So, yeah, have your opinion changed at all on Tokyo in the last 3 weeks?
I mean, this was a very good game to get a win under your belt and kind of prove your early season credentials. But, I mean, Tokyo to me look a bit like they were at the start of last season. I think I was quite positive of them at the start of last year. They were, as they are this year, solid at the back. Were getting goals last season. It was mainly Diego Oliveira who was scoring quite freely. So I think they're still quite well organised, and that's fine. But this season, maybe there's a bit more in attack. You've got, like, Jael and Na Sung-ho on the bench. That's got a lot more depth. But I'd still worry about Tokyo, maybe with a defensive injury, if you lost Jang or you lost Morishige, and especially in midfield. You've only got Takahashi and Hashimoto. And then if one of those goes gets injured, you're looking at, like, young players like Rei Hirakawa, who's only 18, is maybe the next in line in that position. So I definitely worry about how you can sustain this throughout the season. But if you can keep this first 11 going, this is a pretty decent first 11. But, yeah, maybe the depth in some areas is going to be a bit of an issue later on in the season, especially when Kubo goes. I mean, as Alex says, Omori is not really a top-level player. I don't think he'd offer the same sort of wing play, same sort of energy as Kubo. And then if you lose maybe another couple of players, I mean, the lower, like Kyosuke Tagawa, a good enough young player, but not necessarily going to be a decent starter. So I think that's where Tokyo will fall down a little bit. But, I mean, to start the way they have, unbeaten in four, I think you can't ask for much more. And as long as they can keep the team kind of together, I think, yeah, they can continue this for a good stretch further.
All right, then. So, yeah, the good times roll at Ajinomoto Stadium, FC Tokyo alone on the top of J1 after four rounds. All right, then, Alex, it was great to get your thoughts on Tokyo's fast start. I hope you've taken a screenshot of the table, as I'm not sure how long we'll stick around up there. Thanks for popping on to the podcast, and I hope to speak with you again soon.
Definitely. Let's catch up soon, Ben. Pleasure.
Okay, my thanks again to Alex Bishop. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will get cracking on the rest of the J1 Match Day 4 slate.
Introducing Lanco Group for innovative engineering consulting services.
Lanco Group provides superior civil engineering and innovative solutions to developers, local government and service authorities. Working closely with clients, Lanco Group helps meet the complex infrastructure requirements for residential, commercial, and industrial developments. On time, on budget. Find out more at lancogroup.com.au.
Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions.
Tokyo and Nagoya swapped spots in the table after their Ajinomoto Stadium clash, but hot on their heels now, promoted Oita, who won at home for the first time in 2019 on Sunday and claimed their second major scalp of the new campaign, blotting previously unbeaten Yokohama's copybook with a 2-0 home win thanks to a co-golden boot leader Noriaki Fujimoto's quick fire second half brace. Sam, we joked in the Match Day 1 review show about picking Oita for the title, but this result shows they are a genuine J1 outfit that can trouble any side.
Oh, absolutely. I think this was an even better performance than the one that beat Kashima on the opening day. I think they got their tactics perfect. I mean, they sat back mainly with like five at the back, kind of 5-3-2, kind of left no space for Yokohama to move into. And then once they were in possession, they were so comfortable. They could control it if they needed to. They could go quick. They could move forward. They even were fine to play long balls over the top of the kind of high Marinos line. They just had everything about their game that caught Marinos out. Obviously, Marinos' defence and goalkeeper are the weak areas, and they exploited those perfectly. And I think really, really impressive performance from Oita, because the previous two games against Matsumoto, where they lost, and then Jubilo, where they won, but only against 10 men, a bit of a scrappy game, they kind of had lost their way a little bit. They haven't shown like the same level of performance as they did against Kashima, but it looks like they can really step it up for the kind of bigger games, and this was a really, really good performance.
Yes, sir, they were outpossessed, as you would expect. Most teams playing against F. Marinos this season, that will be the case. But, yeah, I mean, they set up very, very solidly, as you say, and they were able to spring a couple of quick fire counterattacks, and 10 minutes into the second half, Noriaki Fujimoto got his first goal. He was involved in the build-up but continued his run forward and finished from next to the penalty spot. And then just 4 minutes later, the latest episodes in Yokohama Calamity Defending Escapades 2019, Sam, when Tomoki Iwata got to the byline, the Yokohama centre-backs obviously forgot that they would have to track Fujimoto and that he wouldn't be offside. They were still trying to play him an offside line, but the ball was beyond them. And, Fujimoto advanced to the six-yard line, and terrific finish, it must be said. A quality back heel, but under no pressure at all because neither of the centre-backs had gone with him. So Fujimoto is just in rare form, and I think it's five goals from four games, two braces in there, and everything he touches is turning to gold, and a lot could be said along the same lines for his Oita side, but he's just in he's in terrific form and taking the chances when they come to him.
Yeah, it's been in terrific form. I mean, last season in J2, he wasn't even guaranteed to start. Him and Kohei Issa would kind of switch places on a game-by-game basis. And then this season, when they brought in Ado Anayu, who was their top scorer last season in J2, I wasn't certain that Fujimoto would be the starter, but he has been incredible in every game, especially the first game he scored a brace. Terrific in this game. I mean, his finish was superb. But, I mean, it is a calamity from Yokohama. Marcos Jr. doesn't track his runner at Iwata as he gets down to the byline. As you say, Thiago Martins steps out for no real reason. And then Ikura in goal. He must see that Fujimoto's there. But even he steps into his six-yard box as if he's going to claim the cross. And he's never going to get there. He leaves himself exposed at the near post. And Fujimoto scores. I mean, terrific technique on it. But, I mean, helped out quite a bit by the Marinos defence. But, I mean, Oita, really, really good. I like Yusuke Goto, who's come in for the last two games. He was kind of a bit of a live wire in behind, making all these forward runs. He's kind of set off Fujimoto last week with a cross. And, they've got a nice little partnership going there. In the all round, the team has built solidly, which was the main factor in this game. I thought the back line were really disciplined. Then you've got the two in front of them with Titipan and Ryosuke Maeda, really disciplined. That's the key to it. But then comfortable on possession. As soon as they got the ball back from Yokohama, they would spring. And as well as that, the kind of the deep play, they know that Ikura will like to come out with the ball at his feet. And that's when they pressed. And they pressed him into a number of areas, which isn't difficult. But that's what they did. But, yes, yeah, really good tactically. Fujimoto, perfect spearhead. And another great result for Oita.
Indeed. You mentioned Ikura there a couple of times. And, there was nearly an earlier example of Yokohama Calamity defending Escapades 2019. But a defender got back to block Yusuke Goto's shot on the line after Ikura came charging out of his box in trademark fashion. But, Goto was unable to decide what he wanted to do in time. And his somewhat tame shot, as I said, was blocked by a Yokohama defender who got back to spare Ikura's blushes. But, yes, Oita were able to triumph on the day. As I said, the two goals in rapid succession for Fujimoto in the first 15 minutes of the second half. And, yes, Oita sit third and, pretty much on merit, you'd have to say. Although, there were that blip at home in their first home game against Matsumoto, and then the asterisk of the win against Iwata last week against the 10 men that they weren't all that convincing in. But this was a terrific performance from Trinita. And Sam, well, our favourite whipping boys in the pretty much the entire 2018 season, even though they were top for so long, were at Sanfrecce Hiroshima. And they made a somewhat stuttering start to the new campaign. When Mr. Salomonson isn't scoring, we wondered who else would. Well, Yoshifumi Kashiwa stood up just after the hour mark in their home clash against Matsumoto on Sunday, and he fired Hiroshima up to fourth. A terrific shot across the keeper from roughly 20 yards out. That was the only goal that Hiroshima would need in this one to seal all 3 points. So, yes, Hiroshima, one of the only two unbeatens left with Tokyo. Hiroshima, 2 wins and 2 draws from 4 games. And they've only conceded 1 goal from their 4. So that's even better than Tokyo, the best defence after 4 match days. But it should be said, the joint third worst attack with just 3 goals from 4 games. So Hiroshima doing enough. They've eked out a couple of wins, Sam, and I'd like to get your quick thoughts on them, but also things that are not looking terrific at all, are they, for Matsumoto? Well, I mean, they do have 4 points so far after 1 win and a draw, but yes, just only able to muster 2 shots here away at Hiroshima, and well, I mean, there are early signs that this is going to be a very long season for them again.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was vintage Hiroshima. I think, as they always were, and especially at the start of last season, supremely well organised, will kind of grind down an opponent, and if the opponent doesn't have that little bit of quality, which Matsumoto didn't, then Hiroshima are quite comfortable. They are relying on kind of moments of individual brilliance to get them through games, like Salomonson's goal and Kashua's here. I think they kind of need a little bit more. They haven't really got a striker that's going to score the goals that Patrick did last season. He's not looked himself, and then Douglas Vieira's up front at the moment. And I mean, he's okay, but I don't expect him to be getting a lot of goals this season. They do have Heiner, I think it is, who was at Kawasaki. He's just been registered, so he should come in and maybe give a bit more attacking quality to that team. But otherwise, they've built on that solid foundation. I think they're not pretty to watch, but I think they're going to be pretty effective again this season, as they were last year. I don't think to the same heights, but still maybe a higher mid-table position for them. And then for Matsumoto, as you say, it's not looked great. I mean, they did get the big victory against Oita, and then a draw away at Jubilo as well. So they're the teams that they'd expect to be fighting with. So they've taken 4 points off that so far. I thought against Urawa last week, it was a poor game. I don't think they were that bad. I thought maybe a draw was fair in that, because Urawa didn't do a lot. So maybe they're a little bit hard done to there. But again, they're a decent team. Rio Nagai up front, I don't think, is going to get anywhere near enough goals. But they do have this Brazilian, Leandro Pereira, who got a couple of minutes in midweek in the Levain Cup. So they're hoping that he can be that spark once he gets fit, probably after the international break. Otherwise, they're pretty solid defensively. They're not going to concede too many goals. So I think they're going to always keep themselves in with a chance. But as you said, I don't think that necessarily the overall quality is there. So they're going to be in for a long season.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't want to be a doom monger for Matsumoto. I mean, they are 12th after 4 games. But you do wonder where a consistent stream of goals is going to come from. But, I mean, yeah, there's obviously quite a few teams down towards the foot of the table that are in a similar boat. So, yes, if they can chug along and pick up the odd win and, eke out a draw when perhaps they might not have deserved it on the day, then, yes, I'm sure they'll be there or thereabouts. I'm not suggesting they'll plummet to the foot of the table and sit there all season. But, they certainly... as I'm sure they're aware, they do have an uphill struggle to stay in the league this year. But again, since last season started, Sam, I mean, the whole 16th has to go into a playoff thing. I mean, it does play a huge part in the overall relegation picture, doesn't it? I mean, it's not all doom and gloom if you're, 12th to 15th, because... unless you slip all the way down into the bottom two and you know that you're guaranteed to go down, then there is always hope, as Iwata discovered, even though they were utterly rubbish for most of last season. And they've certainly carried that on this year. And wouldn't you know it, they currently sit 16th in the table. We'll be back to talk about them in a little bit. But next... to the Sapporo Dome, and after unleashing all kinds of hell on the Shimizu S-Pulse last week, Kashima turned up, and I'm not sure what they were expecting, but they certainly put Consadole in their place, Sam. The visiting Antlers, who were of course coming off a midweek ACL game, returned to Ibaraki with all 3 points after a clinical 3-1 away win. And yes, Sapporo's 5 goals last week, well, they probably should have saved some of them for this past Sunday. It was, of course, that man, Anderson Lopez, the moat jumper himself, who got their only goal of the game. But that came with only 5 minutes left, and it was merely a consolation. It was a showtime early doors in the first half hour. Sho Ito bagged a brace, two terrific finishes as well. He is, he's done tremendously since making the move from Yokohama F. Marinos. His first and audacious chip over Gusung Yun from the edge of the box in the 12th minute, and then he doubled his fun 11 minutes later, sliding under the keeper after a cheeky nutmeg on the touchline and a surging run in field from New Japan call-up Koki Anzai. At 14 minutes from time, Leandro scored and made it 3-0. He was found in acres of space on the right and blasted home after a bit of trickery at Gu's near post. Sam, this was quite a turn-up. I certainly didn't expect Sapporo would be sticking five past Antlers as they did to Espos last week. But, this was clinical Antlers, as I said, at their absolute best.
Yeah, exactly right. I think Sapporo were kind of chalk and cheese from last week. They didn't really cause too many problems for Kashima, who were maybe a lot better organised than Shimizu. I think Shimizu at the moment defensively are a little bit all over the place. But, I mean, Kashima very good, especially with having to rotate with the Champions League. They left Jung on the bench, so playing young Koki Machida alongside Inokai. They've developed quite a nice partnership at the start of this season. They look pretty decent. Leo Silva as well, kind of shielding. And they, I mean, it's kind of a theme at the moment, but they kind of sat back and soaked up the pressure as well. And as you say, clinical is the perfect word. Sho Ito, I mean, he's done so much better than I imagined when he came to Kashima. Helped a lot by Yuma Suzuki kind of getting injured again. That's given him all this game time. But in midweek in the Champions League, he was superb getting a brace there. He's doubled up on that double with this game here. I think he's been kind of a revelation. I know there were a few calls for him to be in the national team, which I'm not 100% convinced on, but I mean, he's definitely a man in form, so you've got to give him that. And I thought Antlers, clinical, took their chances, and Sapporo just, they were lacking some sort of spark they had last week. I can't really put my finger on why it happened, but I guess maybe just one of those days for Sapporo. And Kashima are always a team that are going to hurt you if you have a day off, an off day, and that's what they did to yesterday.
Fair enough then. Okay, so briefly mentioned Kashima in the ACL there. So before I forget, in last midweek, a similar pattern to the opening match day's results. The two Japanese clubs who played at home in ACL match day two both won. Kawasaki and Hiroshima, of course, over Keisuke Honda's Melbourne victory. While the two teams on the road, Antlers and Reds, both drew. So slightly better than how Hiroshima and Kawasaki got on away in match day one. But yes, identical results for the two home and two away Japanese clubs in the second match day of the ACL group stage. The next one, I believe, is in early to mid-April. Don't know off the top of my head, Sam, but that sounds about right. If the listeners really want to check up on that, they're more than welcome to do so. But of course, we will be mentioning the ACL briefly as it works its way through the group stage. So that's our brief update there. I'm sure there's going to be a new episode of the Asian Game coming your way shortly with Paul and Scott to review match day two. So look out for that in your podcast feeds shortly. Let's move on. And Cerezo Osaka took a lead at home against Urawa, somewhat controversially, through Souza's free kick just past the hour mark. It looked pretty clear to me that Ken Tokura jumped into Shusaku Nishikawa and impeded him, but not according to the referee. And yes, Souza's free kick from a tight angle went straight in, and it was allowed to stand. But in the last 15 minutes, Sam, Urawa completed their comeback, Shinzo Kuroki's header, and then a penalty from Kenyu Sugimoto, who looked like he was getting quite emotional in the post-game interview, or maybe he might be blaming that on hay fever. I'm not sure, but yeah, he looked a bit blurry-eyed there in the post-game interview with the reporter. But I would say an important win for Reds. As we've said throughout the season so far, I mean, beginning with the Super Cup episode, Sam, I mean, they have not hit their stride at all, as they are basically playing an extended pre-season, four games into the new season. So gradually, are you seeing week by week that they're gradually picking things up as they work their way through?
To be honest, not really. I don't think they've played well at all. I mean, Sugimoto has not started at all. I think his tears were maybe directed to from the fans who were kind of booing him, giving the Yamaguchi treatment to him at the Yanmar Stadium. But he's not started well. I mean, midweek, I don't know if you saw any of the game away at Beijing, but they had, I think, one shot on target to Beijing's 20, just barely got out of their own half, barely strung a pass together. So that's kind of been their season this year. But they played against the Cerezo team, who haven't played well themselves either. And I suppose they showed good spirit to get back into the game from 1-0 down. And they've got 7 points out of four without ever getting out of first gear. So I think they've got to take a lot of positives from that. I agree with you on the Cerezo goal. I thought it was probably a foul on Nishikawa. Nishikawa doesn't help himself because he bottles it when Tokura is coming near him, so it doesn't put much of a challenge on. If he'd have actually gone for the ball, then got taken out, I think it's 100% going to be given as a free kick. But him kind of shying away from it maybe led the referee to allow the goal to stand. Mm-hmm. But then Urawa kind of turned it around. It was more, well, it was a set piece for the one goal with Kuroki's header, a very good header from Kuroki, and then the penalty at the end which sealed it from Sugimoto. But I still don't think Urawa have hit their stride. Maybe they've got this now international break. I know there are no Urawa players in the Japan national team, which has got to be the first in a long, long time. So they can kind of take this kind of week or two, kind of build more fitness, kind of do a bit more pre-season, as it would be, to try and get themselves ready for the resumption of fixtures after the break. But, I mean, to be on 7 points, I mean, they've got to take that, given how poorly they've played.
Yeah, really interesting, isn't it? I mean, all part of Osvaldo Oliveira's grand plan, I'm sure. But, I'm sure he's relieved and very pleased to have this many points after four games. As you say, after not playing particularly well in any of the games. And, I mean, yeah, eking out a win last week against Matsumoto when they were probably not all that deserving there either. But, yes, every point counts. And, to have seven so far, as we've both said, when they have not hit their straps at all, is a positive return. And, yes, now Oliveira's got 2 weeks to really run them into shape, you would suggest, as you say, Sam, before the league resumes. All right, well, it's been a long time, I'm sure, since Kawasaki were sixth in my J1 running order, but that is where they sit. And, sixth is would be great for them at the moment. They're all the way down in 13th in the J1 table after a 1-0 a 1-0 ambush from Gunma Osaka at Todoroki on Sunday afternoon. I mean, obviously, as you'd expect in a Kawasaki home game, they've dominated the shot count. They've had just as much possession as Gunma, but a well-worked goal, it must be said, in the 91st minute, although Shintaro Kurumaya will be having nightmares about standing and watching Hiroki Fujiharu's across. Roll across the box and watching it go past him, completely unaware that Gunma captain Genta Miura had ghosted into the box at the far post and had the simple task of passing the ball into the net. So Kawasaki, well, much like Reds, Sam, they've not really got going at all in any of their games, but in sharp contrast to Reds having 7 points thus far, Kawasaki have just three draws, and this was their first defeat of the new campaign. I mean, as we said last week, after three draws, I mean, there's not going to be any panic buttons being pushed. And, I did not see this game in full, so I'm not sure if they were their typically dominant selves at home or not. But, this will have really stung to lose this one so late. But yeah, I mean, once you've done speaking about Kawasaki, I mean, this is very much a Jekyll and Hyde season for Gumba. I mean, they've lost their two home games, but they've won both times away from home. So they're road warriors at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you didn't miss anything by not catching this game in full. It was terrible.
All right.
It was one of the worst performances I've seen from Kawasaki in a long time. I mean, they were missing quite a few players. They had Ryota Oshima injured, which isn't a surprise, which is a shame because I really love watching Oshima, but he wasn't there. Morita was rested to the bench. So that midfield was then Kazuya Yamamura and Al Tanaka, which they've not really got any sort of partnership going. Tanaka, I do like. I think he's going to be a very good player, but there's no sort of combination going forward between those two. And then Kobayashi wasn't there either. So, and Damiao was on the bench. So it was definitely a kind of weakened Frontale team. And they looked like the connection really wasn't there. It wasn't the same free-flowing Kawasaki that we're used to. Very disjointed. They did create a few chances, but Higashiguchi was equal to anything that they threw at them. And then as for Gamba, they made a tactical switch last week in the Levain Cup. They kind of went full strength and tested out a new backline where they moved Genta Miura to right back in place of Ojai Suk, and then brought in Suganuma at the back alongside Kim. It was much more solid. Like, I know Genta Miura did pop up for the goal in the last minute, which kind of dispels this theory, but I thought he didn't go forward as much as Ojai Suk normally would. So you only had Fujiharu for most of the time going forward, so they were kind of set defensively. And then they dropped Yasuyuki Kono and brought in Takahiro Ko, was in the centre midfield alongside Shukurata, with Endo then playing in the hole. So it had a lot more energy in that midfield. When you've got Kono and Endo, they're two, like 36 and 39, they're not going to cover a lot of ground. And that's where they got overrun, especially against the likes of Yokohama and Nagoya. That was a key area for them. So they've kind of made those adjustments. They're not going to be as exciting on the eye, on this evidence at least, but it definitely worked for them and got them a very good 3 points.
Yep, terrific stuff. All right, we've got three games left to review, and we're going to finish the episode with a brief look at the Japan squad for the two upcoming friendlies. We'll be back with all of that in just a minute.
Introducing Lanco Group for innovative engineering consulting services.
Lanco Group provides superior civil engineering and innovative solutions to developers, local government and service authorities. Working closely with clients, Lanco Group helps meet the complex infrastructure requirements for residential, commercial, and industrial developments. On time, on budget. Find out more at lancogroup.com.au.
Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions.
Three games left to review. Let's head to the BMW Stadium in Hiratsuka for the late afternoon kickoff that saw hosts Shonan Bellmare triumph 2-1 over Sendai. Shonan's second win of the new campaign. They took the 2-0 lead just past the hour mark thanks to a terrific goals from Masahito Onoda and Miki Yamane-san, but they only had themselves to blame for a nervous finish after Ramon Lopez was left completely unmarked to head home from 6 yards with 5 minutes left. But hang on, they did, and they can take plenty of positives from this result, I would suggest, Shonan. Not the least, the two terrific goals they scored. They were both well-worked. They came from surging runs from deep in midfield inside their own halves. I should add, Onoda started the run and finished the move 2 minutes before half-time. And then after Tsukasa Umesaki burst through midfield, Yamane stroked a terrific shot from inside the D. So, two terrific goals for the home fans to really get sink their teeth into at the BMW.
Yeah, it might be a slight exaggeration, but a bit of total football from Shonan with a left-sided centre-back and right-sided centre-back ending fantastic passing moves. It was the kind of came out of nowhere, so definitely caught Sendai by surprise. But I thought Shonan, for large parts, were pretty good. They controlled the game, a lot of possession, didn't really create too much, a couple of long-range efforts besides the goals. But in general, they looked very confident. A lot may be down to Vegalta Sendai. I mean, I really have a soft spot for Sendai, but there's not a lot of quality there anymore. Any time that they had a good player, he's kind of been moved on. From last season, they lost Itakura and Okuno. They brought in a lot of kind of average lower-end J1, top-end J2 players. They're all kind of much of a muchness, and there's not too much quality there. I mean, Shun Nagasawa's died up front. That says all you need to know, and thankfully was hauled at half-time. But, yeah, Sendai didn't offer too much. The goal kind of, a bit like their goal against Yokohama, it came more so through the Shonan error of not marking Ramon Lopez, but they didn't deserve anything out of it, Sendai. They're pretty abject throughout.
Yes, so I'm glad to let you know, Sam, that your dig at Shun Nagasawa has definitely come through loud and clear this time. And the match day one review show, when we had a few audio problems, I think it actually got cut out when you said Shun Nagasawa. Don't worry, that one's definitely made it through. And yes, we'll make the final edit of the pod. So yeah, I mean, there's a. Yeah, you don't want to say this, be too over the top after just four games, but there's plenty of dross going around in J1 at the moment, and the fact that Sendai are bottom of the pile is, it's pretty damning, I would say. Of course, they're only a win away from Matsumoto in 12th, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams that are really scratching for, goals, a win. Take them up into mid-table. It is extremely early, and I understand that, teams now have 2 weeks to really address what has gone wrong in a lot of cases in the first month. But, for Sendai, there's definitely a lot of work to be done by Susumu Watanabe on the training pitch. All right, so there's two games left, and Tosu rose from the foot of the table. They, of course, had nil points and no goals to their name at the start of the match day. Well, Isaac Cuenca, their new foreign signing, has gone some way to addressing that. Sam, he came off the bench for his second Tosu appearance with 9 minutes left and 2 minutes into stoppage time. Well, he started or played a very early part in the move for the match-winning goal, and then, finished it off with a glancing header from Riki Harakawa's cross in from the left. But for the second straight game, Sam, they've finished their league match with only 10 men. They, much like they did last week, away at FC Tokyo, when Hideto Takahashi was given his marching orders after two yellow cards. His namesake, Yuji, got his second just after the hour mark. And so, as we've discovered in the first three match days, Sam, playing against Iwata, it's almost like a bye. But, Tosu have come with no goals to their name at the start of the match day, as I've said, to play the last half hour with 10 men and then nick it at the death. I mean, that's certainly going some way to, appeasing your home fans, who will have been very frustrated with how the first three match days went.
Yeah, I mean, the only team you want to play in this situation is Iwata, because maybe after the red card, I still think Tosu were the better team. And it's not like they'd played terrifically beforehand. The first half was turgid, nothing really happening for either team. Torres wasn't involved at all, as usual. I mean, Kanazaki had a lot of running, but kind of into cul-de-sacs. They didn't do anything, and Iwata, I mean, there was nothing for them. That Kawamata had the halfest of half chances, that is about it. I mean, Tosu got better once Torres went off injured. There was a more of a link between the front players. Kanazaki was a bit freer to kind of be more of the focal point than the player that dropped into midfield and get the ball. But then Cuenca was the only bit of quality in the game. As you said, for the goal, it was his flick that started the move, then he ends it with a header. But, I mean, both of these teams, I mean, there's nothing there. I mean, Jubilo, oh my word, they were poor last season. I think they're worse this year. I don't know why they didn't address anything in the transfer window. They've not bought in anything. I mean, they've got a couple of injuries, that's a problem. And Taguchi, I think, is one of their better players. He's been injured for most of the start of this season. He started this game but wasn't fit and had to be subbed off inside the second half. but there's so little quality in this team. Yeah, they're really poor to watch. They used to be built on quite a solid defence, but even that's gone. I mean, if you concede to Tosu, I mean, that's pretty damning. And Tosu themselves, yeah. I mean, maybe once you get Cuenca and Torres starting together, maybe that's where the connection comes in. But at the moment, Torres is playing up front, and it's like he's on a different team to the rest of them. No one seems to pass in the ball. They're filled with defensive midfielders. And yeah, they keep getting themselves down to 10 men. So, you know, I don't have much positive to say about either of these two teams, unfortunately.
Yes, they are both down in the bottom four after four games. And, yeah, I mean, obviously it only takes a win for either of them to get out of that mire. But, yeah, they're both certainly struggling to start the season. And, yeah, again, yeah, plenty to work on the training pitch over the international break. So we'll finish off our match day four wrap with the only draw of the match day. It took place at the Nui Vira Stadium in Kobe. Lucas Podolski gave hosts Vissel the lead 4 minutes into the second half and unveiled his new sumo celebration after tapping in from a close range after Andres Iniesta's attempted cutback was cut out. But yeah, Podolski was a Johnny on the spot and able to fire the ball home. And yeah, Kobe were 2 minutes away from going joint second. But after Chong Tese's shot from the edge of the box was blocked and Ryo Hatsuse made a right hash of his attempted clearance, the Shimizu sub, Tese, curled a terrific left-footed finish across Daya Maekawa to earn his side a point. And yeah, the two Shizuoka clubs struggling in the bottom three after four match days. And yeah, Tese's late equaliser spared Espoirs from going bottom on goal difference below Sendai. But yeah, they'll take any small victory they can get at the moment, I suppose. Espoirs has been a very disappointing start to the new season. Kobe, this will just be hugely frustrating for them that they didn't hang on. Whether they deserve to over the course of the 90 minutes, I'm not sure if you'll tell me they did or not. But yes, to lose the 2 points so late on will have been really frustrating as they look to kick on what had been a couple of decent results in a row.
Yeah, and this was another decent match. I mean, it didn't quite live up to last year. There was no goalkeeper equaliser in the 14th minute of added time, no red cards for judo throws. I think we got lucky that Wellington wasn't allowed to play due to these foreign quotas, so he was kept well away from the pitch. But otherwise, decent game. I thought Kobe dominated possession as you'd expect. Iniesta, of course, looks good. Villa and Podolski and Furuhashi. That front four is looking pretty decent. They got Sergei Samper came on for his debut, so I think he'll add a little bit extra in midfield, a bit more controlled possession, although it might see Hirotaka Mita drop out, who seems to make way for all of these foreign players, whether it be for his shirt number or maybe now his position in the squad. But I think Kobe are going to struggle defensively, as I've said many times, especially with this quota, where they're always going to play the attacking players as their foreign players. So for this game, they had to drop the goalkeeper, Kim Sung-kyu. So they brought in Maekawa, who's a decent goalkeeper, probably better with his feet than Kim Sung-kyu, but not as good as a shot stopper. So that could cause problems. And the other option is if they drop Dankler, who's their kind of new centre-back, who's pretty decent, not necessarily going to set the world alight, but if he was the one that they switched out, then there's a lot of pretty poor defenders in behind him. And if Kobe aren't going to be clinical in front of goal, which they weren't in this game, and they haven't really been all season except for that game against Sendai, then they're always going to have that problem going the other way. So, I mean, they've got enough quality that they should be a lot more clinical. But they need to be a bit quicker in possession. There's almost a bit of a passing for passing's sake, which can be the problem with these kind of possession-built teams, but they need to just go forward. Once Furuhashi gets the ball, he's kind of the more dynamic one. He'll move the play forward quicker, and I think they need to use him a little bit more. But obviously, Iniesta is going to look for Villa, and they're going to look for Podolski, and it's kind of going to be those three that have the bulk of play for Kobe. But I think they kind of need to switch it out a little bit. If you go with Furuhashi a little bit more, then Iniesta becomes free, or Villa becomes free. So I think that's the way they need to go. As for Espoirs, it's been a poor start to the season for them. Not really hit the heights of last year. They kind of switched their formation to start with. They went to this three at the back formation, which I think was with El Senyo in mind to play him as the right wing back. But then he was injured for the first two games and the formation didn't work at all. So they switched it back. He started then at right wing, which wasn't ideal for him. And then he's kind of played in midweek and wasn't then kind of fit enough to start this game. So it's kind of not really worked out for Jan Jonsson at the moment. But hopefully after this international break, maybe Douglas will come back. I'm not really certain what his situation is. But as we saw last year, before he came in, they were flirting with relegation. But then his goal saw them not far off an ACL push in the end. So hopefully that sort of situation will occur again for them this season and they'll pull away. I think of the teams that are struggling at the bottom at the moment, I'd see more positivity with that Shimizu squad. And I don't think they're quite at the low level of the likes of Sendai, Iwata and Tosu.
Yeah, fair enough. And you mentioned Sergei Samper there, Sam, and I'm glad you did. I have to say here, apologies to Alan Gibson, because he mentioned Samper early in our Kobe section on last week's podcast and suggested that we might come back to him, and I completely forgot to before we moved on to the next game. So, he came on. I'm not particularly confident in my pronunciation. My Spanish isn't great at the moment, Sam. But he came on for his Kobe debut with the 10 minutes left. Obviously not enough to judge him on. And I have to be honest, I mean, I don't really know much about him as a player to begin with. But, what sort of impact can he have on Kobe once he gets his feet wet and, establishes himself in their first team?
Yeah, well, I've got to be honest, I haven't seen a great deal of him. But then again, he's been injured for long periods of his career. He was seen as kind of the replacement for Sergio Busquets at Barcelona. So I imagine he's going to be the kind of pivot of that back, that midfield. He'll sit there and then start playoff and then kind of be the kind of ball-winning midfielder as well. And I think that will give a bit more balance to that team. At the moment, they've got Yamaguchi in there who, I mean, I don't mind Yamaguchi, but I don't think he's really like that sort of sitting midfielder. I don't think he's got the defensive quality to do that. Maybe Samper can then improve that, and then it might free up Yamaguchi to go further forward, even though I'd prefer Meter in that role. So I think that's where he's going to come in. I think he'll definitely have like a working knowledge with Iniesta and David Villa. He will have been as a youth player while those two were at the club. So I'm sure there's a link there. I know Iniesta was heavily involved in Samper's move across to Kobe. So I think it should be a decent sign if he stays fit. He's had that series of injuries. The same with David Concha, who's come in at Gamba Osaka. Both of them are young players with potential, but both who have really suffered through injuries throughout their career. So they're both gambles. I mean, this is a four-year deal, and he might get injured in the first. I mean, he's got a series of knee injuries, so that could be a risk for Kobe. But he'll definitely bring quality into that midfield.
All right then. So, yeah, that Kobe-Shimizu game was the only draw in the match day, and that's the end of our roundup of J1 Match Day 4, which once again sees FC Tokyo top the table. I better get that in as many times as I can, Sam. As I said earlier, it's probably not going to last. All right, so yes, we now head in to an international break, and that means there'll be a J2 special of the J-Talk podcast next week. But, slightly less important than that, there'll be two Japan national team friendlies, Sam, that take place on Friday at the Nissan Stadium. Japan face Colombia in a rematch, of course, of the first group stage game of the World Cup. And then next Tuesday, the 26th, we've just mentioned Kobe. Well, their stadium will be the host when Japan entertains Bolivia. So some very interesting names in this squad announced by Hajime Moriyasu, Sam. Some returnees and some debutants. So before we run through all of them, let me just ask you, what was your moment when you saw the new Japan squad?
I think maybe, as most people, would be Shinsuke Hatanaka, who I don't know what games at Marinos is Moriyasu has been watching, but the defense is definitely not something I'd have taken away from those games. So I was surprised that he was there. He's only had maybe 8 or 9 starts in J1, so I think that's a little bit early for him. But I mean, this seems to be quite an experimental squad. He's maybe one for the future, so I don't think it does any harm in taking him along. But as long as he's not the seen as the starter for the Copa America or anything like that. But that was a pretty interesting one. But and then otherwise, I liked Daichi Kamada, who's come in to as a very one of the few striking options that are in this squad. He's been in good form in Belgium for Sint-Truidense, maybe better at the start of this season, the European season, that is. I think he's kind of tailed off a little bit after the winter, but he deserves his call-up. But that's another thing. The lack of out-and-out strikers in this squad is got to be worrying. If you without Yuya Osako, you're left with Musashi Suzuki and Daichi Kamada, who's kind of more of like a support striker rather than an out-and-out forward. So that's definitely a concern for Japan going forward.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, Kamada, of course, teammates in Belgium with Takehiro Tomiyasu, who made himself, one of the first names on Moriyasu's team sheet in the Asian Cup, of course. So, yeah, I mentioned some of the returnees. A lot of people will be very happy to see Kosuke Nakamura named back into a Samurai Blue squad. The next thing that Moriyasu has to do is to make the decision that Nakamura is his number one and leave him there. As much as a lot of people would like to see Masaaki Higashiguchi get rewarded for his time spent in so many squads and never really quite making it as the number one. I mean, he would have been the number one for the Asian Cup, but then got injured in the build-up to the first game. And then, for better or worse, Shuichi Gonda was stuck with throughout the tournament. Daniel Schmidt is there, and that definitely means that Hajime Moriyasu's DVD player is broken. Sam's mentioned Shinosuke Hatanaka. He is a first-time call-up and one of the big head-scratchers. Koki Anzai, who I mentioned earlier in the roundup of Antlers' win at Sapporo, he was named to a Japan squad for the first time. And the previously mentioned Kamada and, Musashi Suzuki is called up for the first time, and that's quite a feather in his cap after making the move from Nagasaki to Sapporo. Of course, has been in good form early in the new campaign. But yeah, of the other returnees, I mentioned Kosuke Nakamura, Sam, and got a bit sidetracked. Shinji Kagawa, of course, is the other big one. And you mentioned it's an experimental squad, and that's really interesting to me in the fact that Moriyasu didn't really experiment at all, did he, in the lead-up? Once he was appointed, in the lead-up to the Asian Cup, he basically stuck with a very similar group of players all the way through, and we were wondering whether the likes of Kagawa had simply been shunted aside for good. But now that he is getting regular football in Turkey, Moriyasu's obviously decided that he wants to have another look at him. And, I mean, there's no question when he's on form that he is one of the elite players in a Samurai Blue shirt. But, so those days have been few and far between in recent times, haven't they?
Yeah, I think going before the Asian Cup, I think he had a squad in mind for that Asian Cup, and that was how he was going to build it. Kagawa wasn't really playing for Dortmund, so you can see why he wasn't called into that squad. I think now, especially with Yoshida not in it, or Sakai or Nagatomo, there needs to be some sort of leadership in there. I mean, like the likes of Nakajima and Minamino, they're kind of, and Kamada as well, kind of young players who will definitely benefit from spending this kind of 2 weeks with Shinji Kagawa. He might not see Kagawa as like the long-term answer for Japan, but I think just to have him there working with the younger players is definitely going to be a benefit. As you mentioned there, Koki Anzai coming in, he's one I really like. I've started watching him when I was on J2 covering Tokyo Verde, when it was him and Kazuki Anzai on the left and right-hand side of defence. And he's really made the step up to Kashima, a big part of the way they played, both going forward as a winger and then either left back or right back. He's definitely very versatile. He's kind of made the most of Ryosuke Yamanaka not really getting much of a look in. at Urara since joining, and obviously Nagatomo missing out. So hopefully he can have some good performances. I'd imagine looking at the side, I'd hope he was the first choice left back. I mean, I do fear that he might be Sho Sasaki, who I don't think is good enough to be in this squad, but he used to play with Moriyasu at Hiroshima, so that's why he gets in. But and then elsewhere at the back, I really like to see Shoji and Tomiyasu. That should be the centre-back pairing going forward for Japan. I think these two need to play together, get some sort of understanding together, and that could be a really solid partnership for the next 5-10 years for Japan. Both are doing well in Europe. Shoji has come into that Toulouse team. A bit shaky maybe in the first couple of games, but otherwise he's been pretty solid in that and ever-present in that centre-back role for Toulouse. So, yeah, that's really what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, there will definitely be an inkling to experiment, I guess, for in different positions for Moriyasu. But, yeah, I completely agree, Sam. I think he's got to just get Shoji and Tomiyasu together, and he's just got to stick them there and stick with them in as many competitive, well, they're friendlies, but as many games that he has the team together as he can. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, that should be the two in the center for Japan for the next 10 years. So what better place to get them acquainted than the Nissan Stadium on Friday night. So, yes, hopefully that will be the start of a new dawn for Japan, with Kosuke Nakamura between the sticks, Shoji and Tomiyasu as the centre-back partnership, and the three behind the striker reunited with Shoya Nakajima, of course, missing the Asian Cup. But, yes, he is sure to play a part in hopefully both of these two friendlies with his running mates, Takumi Minamino and Ritsu Doan alongside him. So, yeah, those two friendlies should be very interesting. And, yeah, looking forward to those coming up in the next week or so. So, Sam, that is about it, I think, for this week's episode. Great to have you back on the podcast. And, yeah, thanks for all your thoughts on rounding up J1 and, indeed, the national team.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And that is it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Sam Robson and Alex Bishop, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week with our first J2 special of the new season. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.